stomach ache, and then, you know, instead of giving yourself real time to have a nice good bowel movement, you break into three shorter bowel movements spread throughout the week.
Well, I think that was supposed to be testing and not supposed to be the actual intro of the show, but
that was too good,
Eric. It's got to be the one.
But I wouldn't compare our show to bowel movements.
You said a good one, though.
Oh, a good one. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we do talk about dirty things from time to time, but beyond that,
everything is on topic and it's in the literature or the show. That is what happens.
I promise that there's a real reason for that allegory, that comparison. Let's please not let the minutes dwindle by without explaining that.
This is Game of Thrones, everybody. It's a podcast from the Game of Thrones, aka Song of Ice and Fire universe, that you guys might listen to with your ears. I am I'm Zach.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Micah.
Selena is gone today, and that's sad. She's our other host. If you guys are listening for the first time, she's from Sweden. She is a girl, and she is absent. Right,
she likes apple juice and chopping wood.
She loves apple juice.
Until her axe breaks.
She hates it when the handle's missing.
You guys ever seen the... Zach, you're like a film aficionado. Have you ever seen The Lady Vanishes?
I have not.
It's like that. Selena's gone this week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're sad that Selena's gone this week, but the three of us are here to tell you guys about something that's new, that's shiny, and that needs no polish. It needs not polish.
Although if it did need polish, it would have the pine-scented, furniture polish that you get at like a Menards or something.
Menards. No new car scent? You have something against that?
No, pine. Pine is all the way. New cars are great, but new cars don't need polish.
So here on Game of Thrones, we decided to mix things up a little bit. I don't remember the exact dates because I haven't counted it today, but we've been doing the show for a while now.
Yeah. What was it? 21 episodes.
I'm looking at the podcast history right here.
Right.
And it says, for some reason, the icon won't show up on my iTunes, which is stupid because when I sync it to my phone, the icon is there with the hand grabbing the sword.
Right.
That's also a microphone. But yeah, according to this, our first episode series is coming, aired March 27th of this year. So we've been doing the show about 7 months now.
It's been a while.
And of all that, we've been talking about the books for at least 3 or 4 months now.
So basically what we're trying to say here is we're changing up the format of the show a little bit.
Exactly. Now, what you guys have come to know from our show is basically breaks, hiatuses excluded. We're a normal long form podcast. Sometimes we have an hour episode. Sometimes it's 55 minutes. Sometimes it's an hour and a half. But that's what you've come to know from this show. What we've decided to do from this point on in the future is, in order to give you guys more episodes rather than just to give you a once weekly episode, we're now cutting the show into easier, more time manageable segments. I don't really want to say segment because segment's kind of a misleading term, but basically it's going to be a thrice weekly podcast rather than once weekly. So we're going to be coming at you every Monday, Wednesday, or Friday rather than just one day of the week.
We are the right. Reese's Pieces of Game of Thrones podcasting.
Yeah, we have the
we're bite size.
We have the three colors of autumn leaves, just like Reese's Pieces.
Yes.
Except Selena's like, she's like our dancing like Skittle. Like we're Reese's Pieces and she's the Skittle. And Skittle starts with the same letter as Sweden, so it makes sense.
There you go. I thought it was all because we basically came to the consensus that Robert had to go on a diet. So basically this is like Robert going on a diet. Instead of getting everything all at once and sitting down for an hour and a half and gorging himself, you're getting three meals essentially throughout the course of the week.
Or we just wanted as many shows as he has bastards. And so we decided we had to split them all up.
Perfect. Well, if you guys saw on Twitter recently, we made some tweets and we made a show last week that you guys might have liked. And we had an Ode of the Week sent over from Gordy Walsh.
So again, thanks to Gordy for sending this in, but this is an own. Walder Frey made many offspring with his belly squirts, said Zach on the last episode. Then Gordy, as in me, says, "Gah! Filch, Mrs. Norris, sex scenes, I can't get clean!" Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. We make a point on this show counting how many exclamation points. I think this email or this message has 9 of them.
It's important to note that most of his tweet was in caps too, as well.
We're actually going to talk about Walder Frey in this episode, or I had a point to make. Actually, no, not about him. But I had a point to make about being uncomfortable and children. So there is that.
Zumi1991 on Twitter said that her own of the week was that we actually had a podcast this week.
Ouch.
It made her laugh. And she said, no, not really, but I really missed you. So there's that.
Oh. So she yelled at us for lack of podcasts and then insulted us by saying she missed us, but then not really.
Our listeners have odd lines of logic. They're like a constant memento movie. It just keeps going.
This other own of the week that we got from @theleft_lane, or just Miss Lane if you know her on a personal basis.
She's very active on our forums and tweets. Yes, she is. Stuff.
She said, Micah and Zach's simultaneous, quote, when was the last time you changed your face, quote.
That's an abundance of changing faces. Like,
when was the last time you changed your face?
And my undercover spoiler shit jokes.
Well, we love to have undercover jokes.
Can I ask a question about that?
You may.
Is she referring to spoilerish jokes about actual fecal matter, or is she saying my spoiler jokes are in fact shit?
Weigh in on Twitter, folks, this week. Weigh in. Tweet and let us know what you think the listener, the left_lane, is referring to.
Because I actually did get a tweet from somebody, I'm looking it up right now, which is completely opposite of what she just said. It is from Matthew Potter, and he sent it in to Selena and myself, and he said, you guys did a great job holding back spoilers in this episode of Goo.
I hate how that, but it's become a contest, really, to see how many times Zach and I can bring up things that have like solid answers in the books later, and you and my and Selena and Micah can remain completely silent about it.
Right.
I get tweets about that too, and they're like, oh my God, everybody did a great job not spoiling Zach and Eric because they haven't read. Because I think our listeners know by this point that, you know, Micah, you've read, and Selena has read.
Right.
You know, all of the books, and that it's got to be tough podcasting with us, but hats off to you guys because you do it, and you do it with a policy of not spoiling our faces off.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's, you know, there are occasional jokes here and there about alluding to certain things that happen later on in the books. And, you know, I think the only people that really will get them or understand them are people who have read the books. For people who haven't read the books, they're not going to understand what I'm talking about. I won't throw Selena in there because I don't think she ever really kind of alludes to any spoilers. But, you know, it is difficult at times not talking or not saying anything if you're talking about a character or something that happens that could possibly foreshadow later on in the series certain events. It is difficult. But, you know, we generally do a spoiler-free show unless it's already happened in the series or in the book. So mm-hmm. I'm trying my best.
I think you guys have done pretty well, honestly. And we, you know, it's part of the dichotomy of the show. Like, you two have read, the two of us haven't, and that's what we are. So thank you guys for listening and enjoying. Today on the podcast, we are looking at chapter 34, if you're reading the book chronologically along with us. 34.
Yeah, this is the chapter that was so massive that when we were recording our last book-based episode, we said, wait a minute, we can't possibly go on to this chapter. We have to split it and do it later. And this is the chapter, of course, where Catelyn and Tyrion and her group of misfits who have survived the Mountains of the Moon finally arrive at the Eyrie.
So Catelyn and her merry men are just getting escorted. And I don't really like this guy's name because it sounds so much like Chris O'Donnell from the Batman movies that weren't that good. I really like George Clooney. But Chris O'Donnell.
I like Chris O'Donnell. I like Robin in those two films better than I like.
Who's better, Robin as Chris O'Donnell or Robin as Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
You can't compare the two. You can't do that.
So Donald Wavenwood is taking him to the Bloody Gate, and this is one of my favorite parts of the book. Honestly, this whole entire chapter, not necessarily just the Bloody Gate, but I love that finally, and it's sad that Selena's not here for this moment, a beautiful budding friendship. I wanted to say bromance, but it's played out. It's a beautiful friendship that just buds, and we finally get to see Bronn and Tyrion becoming close friends. And it's cool.
Because you know it's a it's really against Bronn's better judgment to like and trust Tyrion. It's against everybody's better judgment to like and trust Tyrion at first. You know, their initial reaction is like, I shouldn't like this guy. He's a Lannister and Lannisters are crap. But Tyrion is so different from them that I think he proves in, you know, if you have enough close association with him, that he's worth liking. There, you know, he's different and he's special and he's awesome.
Right. And I think it's the audience has the same kind of reaction. You don't necessarily want to like him in the beginning, but you turn around and all of a sudden he's become your favorite character.
You can't help it.
Yeah, no, you can't help it. But I think, and I know Zach agrees, this is one of those chapters where you're just so impressed by Martin and the way that he's able to detail and describe everything about the Eyrie. It's just one of those... Yeah. Those chapters really that stands out in the entire series because the sort of the mind, like you'd love to see this thing. And I think they did a fairly decent job in the show, but you don't get the actual journey in the show that takes place in this chapter.
It's a travesty. Honestly.
Yeah, it really is. I was just blown away by the level of detail that he has. And, you know, it's almost like you'd like to see how does he envision this like drawn out or on screen somewhere, because it would just be really impressive to look at.
No, it's true. I was, I think we mentioned this on one of the earlier shows, and a lot of you guys that are listening probably remember, but truly without a doubt, I'm not personally like mesmerized when authors can write well, because that's what they do. They write well. So I'm less impressed with like, oh, Martin, you did this, but, it doesn't matter because this is one of those scenes that no matter what kind of preconceived notions you have about writing or art or a book, this is one of those scenes that's just like, it's so good. It has to be, you have to give it props.
Yeah. Quite a lot happens because we're not only getting a lot of backstory, characters are meeting each other for the first time in a long while. But also you're getting introduced to this place and this scenery that has this great history, which is something that I'm sure Tolkien did very well. And something that Martin is doing very well at sort of describing how the Eyrie is laid out. You know, with their three different parts to it.
It's like tiered.
It's tiered. And from the show, you know, I just remember that one, it was all too brief. It was extremely brief, you know, like an establishing shot where they're looking up at it. And it's this tremendous, and it just looks like it's suspended, you know, by magic or whatever, because it's just like, it's this tower.
It's like towering. A Super Smash Brothers map, dude.
It's a Super Smash Brothers map. It totally is.
And it's Catelyn's first time there, if I'm not mistaken. And you're kind of experiencing it with her. You know, just there's a couple of times, I think, right, where these sort of vast intakes of breath as she's taking in everything that's around her. And, you know, Eric, you mentioned the fact that we're introduced to people who haven't seen each other in a long time. She sees and greets her uncle for the first time in a long time. And he was actually cut out of the story altogether, I believe, in the TV show, but he's been cast for season 3, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he has. I'm not exactly sure.
Or
fact
maybe
check for us listeners.
I might be thinking of her father and her brother that have been cast. So I could be wrong there, but you know, there's this great conversation that takes place between the two of them where he's saying, "Look, Kat, what the hell are you doing bringing a Lannister to visit your sister when your sister basically fled King's Landing to get away from the Lannisters because she holds them responsible for what happened to Jon Arryn."
I know that we sound really forlorn and it sort of breaks character for the three of us, but honestly, guys, if you haven't read this and you're just listening to the show and maybe you're not reading along with us, because I know not every single person is, definitely at least pick up a book next time you're in a bookstore or walking past one or something and just read it. Just read this part.
Just this chapter.
Yeah, because the context that you get from this is just really, really beautiful. I mean, when we meet Brendan Tully, we get to learn about the Blackfish, which are sort of a division within the Tully family. And I think it's really neat what they've done with that. I just think that that's cool. And a lot of it's awesome. And like Eric was saying, it's a tiered kingdom. And I can honestly say, without a doubt, for me personally, this is the absolute coolest place so far that I've read about. Or that I know about from Westeros or anywhere around the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. It's one of those places you couldn't wait to see when they were, you know, when you knew that the show was going to be released. So, but there is a lot that takes place. It's not just the climb up these mountains to get to the area at the very top. You know, you do get backstory. Eric, you mentioned that. You learn more about the Tullys, more about the relationship between Brendan and Catelyn's father, and how, you know, Brendan has always been sort of this resource for the Tully family, and that her and her brother and even Baelish went to him, you know, in times of need, and that Brendan, you know, got the name Blackfish and uses that sigil really from going off and agreeing to kind of protect Lysa Arryn. You know, and basically telling Hoster Tully, go screw yourself. I don't really have any desire to hang around with you anymore. And we also learn about Robert, too.
So we know that Robin Arryn doesn't like his dolls to be taken away.
Where do we even begin? Well, I guess we begin with that, with Robert Arryn.
I think the absolute scale of this place is magnificent because they're making the trip, right? They're traveling to this place. And they actually, and when I was reading this, it just sort of blew me away for a moment because they get to a point, and I had thought when I was reading that they were there. You know what I mean? I thought that they were there, but they're like, no, we need to rest for the night before we take you up to the castle because it's going to take that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm thinking about driving through like the Hoover Dam, and it's just like, there's no way this could ever be captured. Like, they could never, an attack on the Erie would not work ever.
You know what I mean? There's a certain part where you can't go by foot. You have to go by mule. And then after you're done going by mule, there's a winch that takes you up.
You have to have a certain breed of animal to capture this place.
Yeah. Which I hope that breed of animal is like indigenous to that area. Because if you have to go to the other side of Westeros to get some goats to go take you up the mountain to the Erie, I question how they ever found and settled that place.
I want nothing more than to ride a questionable goat on a questionable mountain trail. Like, that's something that I want to experience.
Maya Stone made that goat her bitch.
She did. And that's what's so great about part of this chapter, because when you're reading it, not only is just the vastness of what you're seeing just delectable and it tastes really good in your mouth, but what Maya is doing with this animal and the way the feet are falling. Like I'm telling you guys, you just got to read it. It's pretty good stuff.
It may be difficult for them to find this though, Zach. You said just go to a bookstore and open up this chapter, but because none of the chapters are numbered.
Right.
It's tough. This is honestly though, and I know every single edition of Game of Thrones out there is typeset differently and published with a different page count. It's a real bitch if you ask me, but this is at just about the halfway mark, and it's a Catelyn centric chapter. So try your luck with that, everybody.
I have a question for you, Micah and Eric.
Sure. Good.
Now, from what we know, and we're just going to assume that everyone's watched season two that's listening. From what we know about the end of season two, and we know that Winters is essentially and eventually coming. I felt like when I was reading this, that this place would be the last bastion of humanity. Like, this is where we're going to make our final stand. You know what I mean? Like, let's do it here. Because the White Walkers, they do walk and they are white, but I think they would even have trouble on the mountain trail.
They didn't climb. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like, Helm's Deep or whatever. You know, it's supposed to be completely defensible, you know, from a massive attack. And this place is so remote and so completely not, you know, untouchable from the ground that you really have to wonder. But then again, a dragon would take all of 2 seconds to fly up and melt this place.
Damn it. You just ruined my whole...
And the other thing I would say, if winter is coming, you better stock up if you live that far above the ground, because supplies aren't going to get to you that easily.
But the Erie's pretty southward, right?
Still, they're at such an elevation where the temperature
like
up there...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like it's perpetually winter there, even in the middle of the July in Florida. It's still snowy.
But I will say, if they ever do get the urge to relieve themselves of all the suffering, they can just jump out that massive door in the bottom of the floor.
We've got some context on stone, snow, and sort of learn more about the bastard names, if that's sort of an unclassy way to describe it. And
I like that.
That was really cool.
That is pretty cool.
Especially Catelyn's reaction, because she seems really warm to this girl right from the start. Like, they've just met each other, and then all of a sudden she hears stone, and that makes her think about Jon Snow and how there's that bastard relationship between the two of them, even though obviously her and Catelyn get along extremely well. You know, they have spent a lot of time together going up the side of the mountain. But I think that the fact that she had that initial reaction, you know, to look down on this girl after, you know, having that initial, oh, she seems like a great girl. I'm really warming up to her. And then, oh, your last name is Stone. It's almost this bias that she carries with her.
It's stupid. It's prejudice is all it is, honestly.
Yep.
I do find it interesting that all of the bastards in the realm, as it were, are branded with that name, you know, or with one of those names.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually.
That was actually really interesting practice to have realized in the book. So that everybody knows that you're a bastard if your name is Stone or Snow or... What was the other one?
Flowers for
Highgard. Flowers, yeah. I was like, because those are the three the towers of the Eerie or Stone, Snow and Sky. But Flowers, right.
So Catelyn gets to the point and she thinks that they're all resting for the night and they're like, no, your sister wants to see you immediately. So they enlist Maya, who's the best person at climbing. And yes, they have a good time. They're getting close to one another. And we're learning more and more about Maya. And this is all from the perspective of Catelyn, which is how the chapter is written. So yes, she was liking her and then she started to dislike her. And then through the text, we can sort of gather and get allusion to the fact that Maya is probably the bastard daughter of Robert, the king, when he was hanging out there as a young lad. And for me, that sort of was a mind blowing moment.
Yeah. He's got kids in
high places,
every part of the realm. high places, low places.
Exactly. Where are the whisk? No, that's where the goats chase the snow. I got nothing, but no,
yeah. That was excellent.
Thank you.
You know, I think it's safe to assume that if you don't with any definitive conviction know that a child doesn't belong to Robert Baratheon, that you should just assume that it's his.
Exactly. That's sort of what I did. It's so sad because she's talking to Maya and Maya's talking about this guy that she really likes. And inside of her head, Kat's like, there's no way you could ever marry this highborn. You're a bastard. And I think Maya's attractive. Like, she's an attractively described person and she's supposedly really intelligent and talented. So it just paints a lot of the context of Westeros that really, at the same time, it doesn't even really matter. Like, not everyone's going to pull a Rob and just jump out of lines like they should, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely.
I like the, you know, how really Lysa is punishing Catelyn for coming in the first place. She's making her go up, you know, the mountainside at night when it's probably extremely dangerous. There's a couple of instances that we run into, but it's very clear that, you know, even Brendan brings it up earlier when he's talking to her and he says, you know, you're not going to find your sister the same way that you left her. You know, she's been hardened by everything that's happened. And that's just one example. The fact that, you know, this is your own flesh and blood. You're making climb up the side of the mountain in the middle of the night. It's the most dangerous time to go. And it's basically her saying, well, thanks for bringing a Lannister into my home.
Yeah. So she's taken up in a basket. And when they meet the Sis, it's cool and chill when other people are there. So then Vardis leaves, Maester Coleman leaves, and then she starts tearing in to Catelyn and just starts basically yelling at her because she brought a Lannister to her house, and that's not nice. You shouldn't do that.
No, definitely
guys,
not.
This is crazy. Like, we were talking about Catelyn and how she has her biases against bastards and all that stuff, but Lysa is insane. Once it was very known what she was doing and the kind of way that she was raising her son... Because we do meet the young prince, or the young, you know, future ruler of the Eyrie, Robert. And it's just, he's a mess. He's an almighty mess. He is not fit to lead anything.
Do you think that part of her psychosis is due to the fact that she's producing milk this late in her life?
But yeah, possibly.
it is certainly possible. I mean,
I think part of what makes the son so ill-equipped to defend himself is that he is still being mothered in that way.
He's like, I'm hungry. And she's like, well, come here. Come on.
But I think she's scared. I legitimately think, yeah, she's a little bit off her rocker. She's touched, as they say in the Potter series from time to time. But there's a legitimate fear in her for her son, because it's mentioned that she's had a number of miscarriages and the fact that she's lost her husband. I mean, even if it wasn't a really sort of romantic relationship between the two of them, or even grew into something like that, she's still very much afraid because she's lost the one person who was, you know, responsible for protecting her and her son. And so I think that that's why she's kept Robert so close to her and is not, you know, willing to leave the Erie, to send anybody they mentioned to the tournament that took place, and possibly why in the future she refuses to help at all. You know, she's secluded and she wants to stay that way.
Well, John Aaron was such a badass. And so when Kat meets Robert for the first time, she's seeing this six-year-old that's still nursing and holding a doll. And it's just like, to her, that's mesmerizing because this guy was awesome. Like, he was the dude who basically made Ned and Robert such badasses.
Yeah. And, you know, when a kid has the kind of destiny that Robert clearly has, you give him a sword. You don't give him a doll, no matter what. You know, like, it's just he's completely incapable of defending himself. And that is, you know, Liza, in all of her protection, you know, wanting to keep him close, has completely destroyed any chance this kid has of ever really growing into his own, because she's smothering him. She puts the mother in smother.
So the last words of this child's father was, "The seed is strong." Now that we have context on the person officially, who is not, doesn't really look like he's six in the show. For me, I felt like he was a little older in the show, but I could be wrong. You know what I mean? He looked a little older, but whatever.
How comfortable would you have to be, though? I mean, this is a complete aside.
Okay.
But if you have a young child, right, and maybe it was prosthetic, I don't really know. It didn't look like it. Your kid is trying out for this part in Game of Thrones, and you're told well in advance, I'm sure, well, part of the kid's job is going to be he's going to suck on like a 40-year-old woman's titty for most of the time that he's going to be, you know, on screen.
Right.
That's a little awkward. I would be interested to like be a fly on the wall during that conversation. Yeah, go ahead.
It's just, how do you get child actors to do the kind of things that are required of child actors in scenes like this? I'm sure it was like somebody's nephew, like somebody on set was just like,
yeah,
I have a nephew who can do this.
Or maybe that'd be even more awkward if it was her own child, I think.
Oh God. Well, it's probably safe to assume that it was either prosthetic or it was just one of those like, we do this for art moments, just the same as like Broadway actors like getting naked on stage.
Like the shadow badge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we do this for art.
Okay. For art. That was for art.
Yeah. So he wants to see the Batman fly, which is basically a famous quote from the TV show. And finally, we got to see that in the book. And now the chapter's over. So it's weird because we're past it. And it was beautiful, much like this episode has been beautiful. And I would have to say, because I want to move right on to the own section, because I have to get this out of the way, guys. But I'm going to have to give my own of the episode to most definitely Maya's goat for just being a strong, just a strong, generous soul navigating the treacherous mountainside
in the dark,
this fabled keep in the dark,
in the dark.
Her goat has night vision. He's a night vision goat. And he's just a beautiful creature. So I'm going to give his own to his existence. So there we go.
I like that. My own of the week, this episode, I should say, goes to Tyrion. And it's when Lord Nestor is talking about taking care of him for the evening. And he says, "And I charge you to bring the prisoner a cup of wine and a nicely crisp capon before he dies of hunger," Lannister said. "A girl would be pleasant as well, but I suppose that's too much to ask of you."
He's always talking to himself about himself in the third person in front
He's
of
like everybody. He's like The Rock.
Yeah, listen here. The Rock says this, you jabroni. "I need some wine. I need some seasoned lamprey pie. And bring me a lass, would you?"
My own precedes that. But it is Tyrion. It's Tyrion and Bronn, actually. And it's Bronn who holds the own here, where essentially they've just arrived from, you know, fighting the Mountains of the Moon, the pass. And Bronn asks Tyrion, they're sort of recovering on a rock. He says, "Your first battle?" And Tyrion nodded. "My father will be so proud," he said. His legs were cramping so badly he could scarcely stand. Then Bronn says, "You need a woman now." He says, "Nothing like a woman after a man's been bloodied, take my word." So
love it.
I think that quote solidified their friendship, I think. Solidified the fact that Bronn is now looking after Tyrion.
If there's a part from this chapter, from this slice of ness, or maybe even this episode, or maybe it's even something that we've tweeted, quite possibly the fact that Selena has no voice any longer and is sadly missing today,
She sold her soul to like a sea witch or something. It was really weird.
Yeah, no, she sold to rock and roll is what she did, Eric. That's how, that's why it's gone. You know where to do that. You can shoot it to us on Twitter, which is just obviously at Game of Owns.
Although if you do have a longer format of contact for us, you can always email us at our email address, contact@gameofowns.com.
It's sort of sad that she's not here because we don't get to have one of the epic and fabled hypeable plugs. But I think that we will gladly take up those reins and tell you to visit that website, because even if she can't speak, she can type and will be doing so on hypeable.com.
HYPABLE.com.
That was really good. You guys, they should pay you for that, actually. I think
Believe me, my check's in the mail right now.
Okay, well, good. I think that's only fair.
Now, Micah, I do want to let you know that there are thousands of people right now waiting with bated breath to hear what you're about to say. Are you ready for that kind of pressure?
I'm ready. And of course, you can rate and review us on iTunes. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable. This is shouldn't be... Well, if we do have a couple of new listeners, we should explain this a little bit. Each week we do ask that you go out there and give us your feedback through iTunes. But it's really important that nothing less than 5 stars be given. And usually what happens is I give you a little incentive to rate us 5 stars. But for those of you who've listened to us for weeks and months at this point, this is nothing new to you. But however, this week, if you choose not to give us 5 stars, this is what is going to happen to you. In celebration of Mr. Baumgartner, right? He just skydived yesterday, safely back. Yeah, from 128,000 feet, breaking the sound barrier. I believe, right?
With his body.
Human form, yes.
Yeah, and tying that into the Erie, right? So if you do not give us 5 stars, you will have to skydive from the top of the Erie with Maud on your back. And you'll have to use whatever is the equivalent of skydiving equipment back in the days of Westeros.
Oh my God. So they're going to be tandem skydiving with Maud.
He's your parachute, essentially. So good luck.
Guys, if you have to use another person as a flotation device in the sky, I would suggest you not do that and just adhere to Micah's requests, please.
Yeah. You know, they've been a little bit, I felt like maybe in the last couple of episodes, they've been a little bit dirty.
Suggestive.
Yeah. So I thought, you know what, we'll take it in a different direction this time. But don't worry, for those of you who really want something inappropriate, if you tune in to episode 25, 26, or 27, you see, this is the thing. You never know what episode it's gonna be on now. So you're going to have to...
And if you would like a personalized threat, just tweet at MJTBomb and he'll take care of
it. 9 out of 11 listeners found this following review helpful by Zach Louie. It's called... Mm-hmm. The 5-star review is, I saw that one of the hosts is really, really cute. Like, put the Kingslayer to shame cute. And that voice, oh girl.
Oh, Selena? Is that who they're talking about?
Yeah, no? That's who they're talking about. You guys heard it here on Game of Owns. It is a now thrice weekly podcast for your ear holes. And we can't wait to see you guys in 2 days. I'm Zach Louie.
I'm Eric Skull.
And I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
Bye. Keep the owns coming.